Thank you, Mr. Nance, and I think it's afternoon, right? So good afternoon, everyone. Yes, we're from the East Texas area. We've been there 40-some years. Both my wife and Rich and I are from southern Indiana. But the cold winds blew us down south, and we stayed there. We went to the Feast in the Dells this year. It was nice and cool and comfortable. Very nice. We had about almost 640 people. Nice sized congregation. We enjoyed it up there. Well, there's a commercial I often hear on the radio in our area. You may or may not in this area. It's an advertisement about a plumbing company. The boss is on the phone talking to his employer named Richard. Now, Richard hadn't showed up for work that day for some reason. Richard's on the phone telling his boss that he's having a plumbing problem, and he's still waiting for the plumber to show up. In the background, you hear noise, fishing, and stuff in the background. But now the boss is understanding because he said, no, plumbers are always late. They say they'll come at one time and late, late, late. But this guy came because the advertisements for the plumbing company, they'd already been there real early. And Richard was lying to his boss, giving him some excuses about why he hadn't come in. And we're constantly hearing excuses, aren't we? We heard all the excuses. If you had children, if you worked in a school, all the excuses given about why children don't have their homework that day. The traditional, my dog ate it, my dad took it to work with him, different things like that. And it's also the same way with people when it comes to excuses for making it to work. There are actually websites, if you go online and look at, Google it, that will talk about such excuses on these websites about how to miss work. Some of the excuses are alien abduction. That's always a good one. Why they bring them back, I don't know. Traffic. Now, that is, you know, a lot of traffic. Bear attacks. That will do it. And one gentleman said his dog buried his car. Very believable, right? And by the way, if this sermon is not very good, I have an excuse, too. You see, I had almost completely finished it, and I did not back it up, and it disappeared. So I had to go all through it again and do it all again. So there again, I'm free. It's not good. That's not my fault. There are actually websites online say you need a credible excuse to get out of something. You can go online and they'll tell you how to give a credible excuse for being late to work, for missing a party, whatever the case may be. All around us, we hear excuses, don't we? It's a constant thing. Politicians, they're really good at excuses, aren't they? Every 2 years, 4 years, whatever the case may be, they'll promise the moon, right? They'll do this, they'll do that, and then they'll spend the next 2 to 4 years explaining why they can't do that. Excuses after excuses. And mankind, from the very beginning, if you think about it, has been using excuses mainly not to obey God. Today I want to look at some excuses that people use. Just a small percentage of them, really. And let's think about, as we think about the end result of these excuses, they can be our destruction if we're not careful by using excuses. The title of the sermon today is No Excuses. And what got me to thinking about this was, you know, one time, like most of us, you do something you really shouldn't, attitude problems. You go to God and what do? Do you go to God and say, well, man, I'd have done that if only this hadn't happened. But no, you go to God and say, no excuses, Father. I blew it. And that's what got me thinking on this subject. That's why the title, No Excuses. Benjamin Franklin quoted saying, he that is good for making excuses is seldom good for anything else. Think about that. So let's look at some reasons that people use excuses. Again, I'm looking at it from our point, a Christian point of view. How mankind uses excuses to do what they want to do. And again, most of those times they use to excuse themselves from obeying God. So point number one, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. I'm sure you've heard this before, right? Let's go to Genesis chapter 3. Very familiar, obviously. It started with our first parents back in the Garden of Eden, didn't it? Genesis chapter 3, and we will start in verse 9. You know, earlier in the chapter, Satan had deceived Eve in partaking of the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Adam took it as well. Even though Adam wasn't deceived, he went ahead and did it anyway, didn't he? So, Genesis chapter 3, verse 9. This is after that, a taking of the fruit. Then the Lord God said to Adam, and said to him, called to Adam, said to him, "Where are you?" And so he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." Verse 11, he said, "Who had told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you that you should not eat?" Then the man said, "The woman whom you gave to me, with me, she gave me of the tree, and I ate." All right, think about what he just said. He said, "It's not my fault. That woman that you gave me," by the way, I didn't ask for her, "that woman that you gave me, she gave it to me. So God, it's really kind of your fault in some ways. Pass the blame. It's not my fault." Eve didn't do much better though. Verse 13, she blamed the serpent. And the Lord God said to the woman, "What is this that you've done?" And the woman said, "The serpent deceived me and I ate." Again, it wasn't her fault, was it? Who created the serpent? His fault. See, you get back again. It's not my fault. In fact, really, God, it's your fault. Our parents set the stage for us, didn't it, for what was to come. Again, it's not my fault. It's always somebody else's fault. Those who've had children or have children understand that. Hey, it's not my fault that my brother got hit in the face with the toy I was swinging around. He put his face in the wrong place. You know, it's his fault. It's not my fault. As you know, that's how it goes. Cain, the same way, the firstborn child, said the same thing. When God asked him about Abel, what did Cain say? "I don't know what happened to Abel. You know, am I supposed to know? It's not my fault that he's around here, is it?" That's what Cain said as well. That's probably the most commonly used excuse that all of us use. Because the reality is probably one of the hardest things for us to admit. It's our fault, isn't it? It is really one of the hardest things to admit. We all know it's true, and we all do it on occasion. So let's look at point number two. Point number two. Shift the blame to others. Use the excuse to shift the blame to others. Again, I venture to say that every one of us here have used that, shifting the blame. You know, it's like everyone else is doing it. Why can't I? You know, your mom said, if you jumped off a bridge, you know, your friends, would you do it? Well, yeah, it'd be their fault too, right? We all heard that. But we've all used that. Let's go to Exodus chapter 32, and let's see an example. This example of, we'll start Exodus 32, and we'll read verses, start in verse 1. The story or the account of Aaron and the golden calf. If you remember the account, Moses had gone up to Mount Sinai to get instruction from God, and he left Aaron there in charge of the camp. Let's read verses 1 through 6. Exodus 32, verses 1 through 6. "Now when the people saw that Moses had delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.' And Aaron said to them, 'Break off the golden earrings which are in your ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me.' So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and they brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hands, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. And then they said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.' So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, 'Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord.' Then he rose up early on the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." Really, there's never been an explanation I know why Aaron did this. I mean, he should have known better, right? It wasn't that long ago, back in chapter 20, that God had just given the Ten Commandments. And talking about, you know, no idols. But we know that, as we read, that Aaron personally fashioned the idol, didn't he? He personally fasted, but that's not what he told Moses, though. Read verse 21. This is after God had told Moses to get down and take care of it. Verse 21, we read verse 21 through 24. And Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you brought so great a sin upon them?" He's like, "Did they blackmail you?" So Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, they are set on evil. And they said to me, 'Let us make gods that shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So I said to them, 'Whoever has any gold, let them break it off.' They gave it to me, they cast in the fire, and this calf came out." You know, Aaron, if you read the account, Aaron's like, "Well, they brought me this gold, we just kind of chunked it in the fire, out popped the calf." That's pretty good if you think about it. As if Aaron had absolutely nothing to do with it, didn't he? That's what he acts. Instead of taking responsibility, he made a lame excuse. Verse 22, what did he say? He shifts the blame to the people. "It's not my fault. You know the people. They are set on evil. It's the people's fault. It's not my fault." Shifted the blame. That's what Aaron did. And that's easy. We'll do that on occasion ourselves, don't we? Something comes up. "Well, you know, they told me to do this," and something like that. It's an excuse we all have used. Again, we have to be careful because we can see what it will do to us. It can lead to our destruction, if you think about it. Point number three. Let's look at another excuse. Point number three. Excuse of fear of what others may think. The fear of what others may think. In this case, we're going to 1 Samuel 13. 1 Samuel 13. And we'll read a couple places in Samuel about the first king, King Saul. 1 Samuel verse 13. And we will, chapter 13, we'll read verses 6 through 13. Now here Saul had and all the Israelites gathered together to fight the Philistines. The Philistines had a huge army, and the Israelites started getting scattered and were leaving. They were getting scared. Samuel had told Saul to wait at Gilgal. Wait till Gilgal, and then Samuel would offer up the sacrifices. So did Saul do what he was told to do? Verse 6. "When the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves and thickets and rocks and holes and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. And we had waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, 'Bring a burnt offering and a peace offering here to me,' and he offered up the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and to greet him. And Samuel said, 'What have you done?' Samuel said, 'When I saw the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made a supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled, or it means really forced, and offered a burnt offering.'" Saul took authority which he did not have. The people were leaving. And again, he said, I forced myself to do that because the people were leaving. And what's the end result of this particular incident? Let's read verse 14. "But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Again, Saul didn't do it because he was afraid people were looking at him. He had to do something. Chapter 15, another account. Chapter 15, starting verse 18. Another account where Saul used this excuse. He used his excuse to disobey God, even though Samuel had told him what to do. As you know, he's told to utterly destroy the Amalekites because they had attacked and ambushed Israel when they had left Egypt. So Saul got the army together and went to destroy them. But Saul didn't do what he was instructed. Verse 18. Samuel speaking, "Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.'
Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, the king of Malachite. And I have utterly destroyed the Malachites. But the people took of the plunder and the sheep and the oxen and the best things which should be utterly destroyed to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. What was the reason, again, that Saul didn't do it as he's commanded? Well, here it talks about the people took it. And we'll drop down in verse 24. Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words. Why? Because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Instead of obeying the voice of God, he feared the people, what the people thought. And what ended up happening to him? Eventually he died because of it. He was rejected. He was more concerned with what the people thought than obedience to God, what God had told him to do. You can hear the same excuses today if you think about it. I had a relative where I grew up as my dad's brother, and he loved the Plain Truth magazine. My dad got the Plain Truth magazine, and they'd come out, whenever they come out, usually on a Sunday afternoon, he'd sit down, chair by himself, read the entire Plain Truth. He'd talk about, well, Mr. Armstrong is right. He teaches the truth, you know, but he wouldn't ever order the magazine. His wife hated the Plain Truth. She hated the magazine. She would not let him, quotes, order the magazine. And because really he feared his wife more than he feared God, he never would order the magazine, though he knew it was the truth and loved reading it and talked about how good it was and how Mr. Armstrong was right. And I've even heard him use the excuse, well, my wife, you know, she don't let me have it. Well, maybe because she'll get upset, she'll throw it out and throw me out maybe. So again, that's an excuse that people use when it comes to obeying the truth. Other people you've heard over the years, and I'm sure you have, would say, well, my wife, my friends, my business associates, whatever, what would they think? What would they think of me if I started doing this? What would they think of me? What if they would think of me if I started keeping those Jewish holy days? What would they think of me if I stopped doing things on Saturday and observed the Sabbath? And that's a big thing for people. And a lot of people, for that reason, that's the excuse they use not to obey God. They allow the social pressure, business, family, whatever the case may be, more important, and use it as an excuse not to obey God. Again, like Saul, he feared people. People who do that, they fear the people and what the people think more than they fear God. And we have to be careful that we don't let that happen to us as well. Well, let's go to point number four. Point number four. Point number four, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. You've heard that excuse. I have. Many people use this excuse when they don't want to do a task, when there's something that they don't want to do. Well, I'm not good enough to accomplish this. I'm not smart enough or good enough to take care of this problem. I'm not good enough to deal with people. I'm not good enough, whatever the case may be. As an excuse to be used. In fact, that excuse actually has been used many times in the scripture as well. A good example is when Moses, God was talking to Moses. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 4. Exodus chapter 4, and we'll read verses 10 through 13. I've heard that excuse before. Well, I'm not good enough to do this, or I'm not. There's got to be somebody else who can do it. Exodus chapter 4, verse 10. If you remember the account, God had just performed a miracle of the burning bush to get Moses' attention. And then starting in verse 10, God tells Moses what he wants Moses to do. Verse 10. Be good if I got in the right chapter, wouldn't it? Exodus 4, verse 10. And Moses said to the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent. Neither before nor since you've spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Or who has made the mute and the deaf, the seeing or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and you shall, and teach you what you shall say. But he said, O my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send. Moses says, I can't speak good. You know, I stutter, I'm slow at speaking, and I don't care. Just send anybody else, not me. Let somebody else do it. I'm not good enough to be your spokesman. Anybody but me. But God, as you know, did convince Moses to do it. And Moses did a great job. Moses, despite his inadequacies, God used him. God would not accept that as an excuse, did he? He didn't accept the excuse that Moses tried to use, saying, I can't speak well, God. He didn't accept it. He didn't accept the excuse when we give excuses like that either. He's the one who can do it. Another place this excuse was used is in Judges. Judges chapter 6. Let's go to Judges chapter 6 and we'll read verses 12 through 16. Judges 6, verse 12 through 16. This is the account of Gideon. This is where the angel of the Lord appeared before Gideon. Judges chapter 6. God had allowed the Midianites to punish Israel because of the Israel's disobedience. Judges 6, verse 12. Verse 12. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Look how God, how he addressed him, a mighty man of valor. And Gideon said to him, O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles which our father told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord had forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of Midianites. Then the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? Then he said to him, O my Lord, how can I save Israel? And indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's household. Gideon was humble, but you know what he said? Look, my tribe's the least, and I'm the least of the least. How can I do anything? It's interesting if you, like I say, if you read, God says, mighty man of valor. Gideon didn't view himself that way, did he? He said, I'm the least, I'm a nobody. You know, I just can't do it. But again, we know after much different miracles that eventually Gideon did do it, didn't he? Again, God doesn't accept that excuse that I'm not good enough. You know, the good excuse of saying I'm not good enough doesn't work. Let's go to Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5. We'll read verses 3 through 8. This is where one of the 12 apostles tried to use this excuse as well. This happened, Luke chapter 5, verses 3 through 8. This happened after Jesus Christ had told this particular disciple, this apostle, who was fishing from the boat, where to cast his net into the water to get fish. Luke chapter 5, verses 3 through 8. Luke chapter 5, verse 3. When he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and he asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. And when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered and said to him, Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking, so they signaled to their partners on the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats, so they began to sink. Look at the reaction of Peter in verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell down at Jesus' knee and saying, depart from me, I am a sinful man, O Lord. Peter was giving this excuse, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm a sinner. I don't need to be around you. But he did change his mind, as we know. Peter did change his mind. And he did follow Jesus Christ. He did forsake all he had and followed Christ, didn't he? Again, God doesn't take that I'm not good enough as a legitimate excuse. You ever thought about yourself? You ever have that thought that, maybe I'm not good enough to be called into the body of Jesus Christ? You ever thought about it? I have. I've over the years, I suspect most of us have. You know, we think, why would God call us? We're not anything special. No, we're not. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We'll read verses 26 through 29. God didn't call us because we are something special in that aspect. He called us for another reason. God shows us why here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29, why God called us. And it's not because we are, quote, good enough. Chapter 26. For you see your calling, brethren, not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base or the despised things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen. And the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are. That no flesh should glory in his presence. You know, as we read, there's none of us here that are, quote, good enough, are they? None of us are good enough to accept what God has given. He didn't call us because he's good enough. He called us to glorify his name. Not because we're so good that he should call us. Again, we have to think about that. God called us and we are the weak of the world. We're not supposed to stay that way. But he did call us because we are the weak of the world. And when, again, later, second resurrection, these people who knew us, they'll probably say, really? God called you? Really? I remember you. This is prior to conversion. Hopefully after conversion, they say, yes, we understand. But, you know, because again, how many presidents are here? I didn't see anybody raise their hand. How many Nobel Peace Prize winners are here? How many just common folks are here? Here we are. That's what God called. Again, he called us to glorify his name. So if you ever hear someone say that, and again, I had this come up to my mind because I said that to somebody one time. I said, you know, if I was God, I wouldn't have called me. You know, I know my shortcomings. I know my problems, my difficulties. And he corrected me in his wisdom. He's a little older than I was. He said, who are you to judge what God does? Who are you to decide what God does and who he calls? God calls whom he wants. It doesn't matter whether you think you're good enough or not. So I said, okay, you're right. I'll keep my mouth shut. Be thankful that God has called me. But it's easy to get in that. We're not good enough. We're not. We all know that. So again, if you ever hear anybody say that, tell that brother, tell that sister, you're right. No one is good enough to be able to be that way. God calls us in his mercy to glorify his name. I'd like to read a quote from an author named Roy Bennett. Quote, maturity is when you stop complaining and making excuses in your life. You realize that everything that happens in your life is a result of the previous choices you've made. Start making new choices and change your life. Let's go to point number 5, another excuse that people use. Point number 5, it's really not that important. It's really not that important. You hear that excuse made when people have their priorities messed up. It can be, well, I don't have time to spend with my family. I've got work to do. I've got this to do. I've got that to do. The family's really not that important. Now, they don't say that. But their actions show that it's really not that important. People also use this excuse not to obey God. Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, we'll hit a couple verses here. It's the parable of the sower. Matthew 13. And we will read verses 7 and 22. Matthew 13, verses 7 and 22. Again, a parable of the sower. Everybody knows, no doubt could quote this. Matthew 13, verse 7. And some, well, the rest of it was talking earlier, but I'm going to just concentrate on verse 7. And some fell among the thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. Verse 22 explains what that verse is. Verse 22. Now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. You see, they say to themselves, I've got more important things to do than put the truth first. I've got more important things to do. We've all known people like this. They get excited. Maybe they first start coming to church. They get really excited. They leave the literature. They're on fire for it. But then they start getting pressure. Pressure from family. Pressure about keeping the Sabbath. Pressure about from their boss. You know, you gotta be there. You can't. You'll lose your job. You gotta come to the work on the Sabbath. And they slowly, many times, begin to drift away. They allow the cares of this world to choke out the truth. It's really not that important. That's what they end up convincing themselves. Now, I knew a man who, I met him as a teenager. I started attending church when I was about 15. A real, real wonderful man. Warm, generous, very special, easy to talk to, could talk to teenagers. I mean, he was old. He's in his 40s. I mean, he's an old man. But he could talk to teenagers. You know, and that's pretty rare sometimes. He could talk to teenagers real easy. But then we had one problem. His wife wasn't in church. She would never come. Now, if they went at that time to St. Petersburg, Florida, he would go. She would go with him. But any other feast site, she wouldn't go. She would go for the vacation. Otherwise, you know, he had to go on his own. Our first feast as a married couple, my wife and I, we went to Tucson, Arizona. And we spent most of the feast with him. He was at a very, very, very good job, had lots and lots of second tithe. And he had kind of adopted us for the feast, which we didn't mind. Being newlyweds, we didn't have a whole lot of money. And he had a lot of money with no one to spend upon. So we loved him very dearly. We thought highly of him. And frankly, we didn't mind being adopted with him, especially if he spent money on us. Pretty nice. But the cares of the world eventually got him. 1995, he quit attending. He said, his excuse was, I no longer have to do this. I no longer have to do this. Because, you know, my wife won't do it. Why did I just separate my wife? Now I don't have to do that. I don't have to be separate from her. He allowed the cares of the world, in this case, the cares for his wife, to choke the word, to choke the truth. And I haven't seen him since, don't know anything about him since then. But it was very disappointing to my wife and I. But again, he was a wonderful gentleman, very kind and generous. But if we're not careful, again, if you're not careful, the truth is just not that important after a while, if you're not careful. And again, he appeared solid. If you'd asked me that would have happened, I would have said no way. Absolutely no way. Solid, knew the scripture. Again, just wonderful. But the cares, his wife, eventually took him out of the church. Or he allowed it to take him out of the church. That's the best way to say it. Luke chapter 14. We'll read verses 16 through 14. Luke 14. This is the parable where Jesus Christ talking about a man who prepared a great supper for those guests to come. Luke 14. But those he invited gave an excuse of why they could not attend. Luke 14, verse 16. This is after someone had said, blessed is he who eats bread in the kingdom of God. And verse 16, and then he said to them, a certain man gave a great supper and invited many. And he sent his servants to the supper time to say to those who were invited, come, for all things are now ready. But they were all with one accord began to make excuses. The first one said to him, I bought a piece of ground and I must go and see it. I ask you to have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I am going to test them. I ask you to have me excused. Still another said, I have married a wife. Therefore, I cannot come. Look at the excuses that these people give. The first one said, I've got to bought me a piece of property. I've got to go check it out. In other words, you know, I've got to go do these physical things first. I've got to take care of my business type things first. I don't have time to take off for God. I've got only so much time, and I know it needs to be done, and first things first, I need to take care of my property rather than going to this banquet. I only have so much time, so first things first. The second one had bought some oxen. He had to go out and test them, put them to the field to test them. They couldn't wait till later. No, it had to be done right now. Or that was his excuse, wasn't it? It had to be done then. He couldn't say, well, I'll do it tomorrow. No, I had to do it then. Many people use this excuse not to follow God. Again, I've got too many other things more important to do. I've got to do them now. I can't wait. They're first. You know, business comes first. That was this person's attitude. Business comes first. My business needs me now. Can't afford to take off for the Sabbath. Or someone might say, my boss will fire me if I take off for the Sabbath. You know, or take off for the feast or something like that. I knew a man who attended, where we attended church up in Louisville, Kentucky. It seemed like every year he got fired for taking off for the feast. Every year. He always got a better job. Every year. So, I mean, it worked out God. God took care of him. It was a test for him, though. Because every year, it doesn't matter. It seemed like almost every single year he got fired. But he got a better job. So that's fine. Now, the third man, he said, I got married. I can't come. I just took a wife. I can't come. Kind of like the man I talked about earlier. He put his wife ahead of the truth, didn't he? He put his wife ahead of it. God will never accept that excuse for not obeying him. Read verse 26 and 27. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, and that means love less by comparison, does not hate his father and his mother, wife or children, brother, sister, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross, come after me, cannot be my disciple. That means we can't use that excuse. We have to love God above everything else, including our very own life. And that's pretty tough. All these three men in this, given in this parable, put other things ahead of themselves, ahead of God, worshiping God. These things have become their idols. And what did the man who gave the great supper say about these men? Verse 24. For I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper. Again, we know if we put other things ahead, if we use that excuse of obeying, putting people ahead or business or whatever the case is ahead of God, we will not be in that wedding supper, will we? We will not be there. We will not be changed at the Feast of Trumpets, will we? Will not be. Will not be invited there. Will not taste of it. Now let's look at one more excuse, another excuse. Point number six. Weakness or lack of good character. People use the excuse weakness or lack of good character. And the one weakness I want to look at back in Proverbs is the weakness of being lazy. Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20, we'll read verse 4. Proverbs 20, verse 4. Verse 4. The lazy man will not plow because of the winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. What's the excuse he uses? It's too cold. It's too wet. I can't plow now. I'm just stay inside. Don't worry about tomorrow. Worry about only right at the moment. Again, an excuse not to do what he's supposed to be doing. And this is, it can apply spiritually by us not taking care of the spiritual things we should be now. Use the excuse, well, it's too late, too early, too whatever. Chapter 22, verse 13. The lazy man says, there's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the street. Think about that. He's saying, I can't do anything. There's some danger out there. There could be some unforeseen. I don't know what it is. I can't go out there because there's a lion in the street. So I'm afraid. So I'll just sit here in my house and not do anything. The unforeseen danger, and I'll put that in quotes, the lion in the street, is an excuse to do nothing. Absolutely nothing. The excuse being used in all kinds of things. I can't go to college. I might fail. The unforeseen danger, lie in the street. I can't accept maybe a greater responsibility at work, perhaps. I might fail. I can't, can't do, like even in the church, I can't lead songs, perhaps. I can't give sermonettes because, you know, I'm in front of everybody. When I fall on my face, which we all do, everybody will see that. You can't use that excuse again. So on and so on. People use that. And a lot of times, again, it's because of they just don't want to do it. They're lazy. That's a character problem. Not always, I understand. But you have to make sure that's not why we're doing or not doing it. God wants all of us to grow in character. We're going to Matthew chapter 25. God wants all of us to grow in the character. And it means at times we have to do things that we may not want to do. It hurts sometimes to grow. Matthew chapter 25, a parable, Matthew 25, and we'll read verses 24 through 28. We cannot afford to be lazy or fearful. Matthew chapter 25, verse 24. This is the parable of the talents. Now, the talent given here is an amount of money, and I Googled it. And the one site that I looked at a couple of them, a talent of silver, according to this site, was about 100 pounds. And that's worth about $27,000. But a talent of gold was 200 pounds of gold. And that's approximately worth $4 million. That's a lot of money. So you can see a lot of money, and I'll put that in quotes, a lot of money was entrusted to these servants, wasn't it? That's a lot of money. Matthew 25, verse 24. The other two had already been taken care of, and this is the last one. And he said, and then who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I know you are a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I had not sown and gather where I had not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money to the bankers, and at my coming I would receive my own back with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who have 10 talents. So what did the man with just one talent say? I mean, he still had a talent. If you think about it, if it was gold, if it's according to what I'd read, he still had $4 million to work with. That's a lot of money to work with, isn't it? But because he was afraid and he was lazy, it's kind of like being afraid of the lion in the street, he didn't do anything with his talent, did he? He just hid it. And when his master came back, he said, well, here it is. Here's your talent. I didn't do the thing with it. All this time I've had this money. And what was the end result? Did his master accept that excuse? Say, oh, that's fine. No, he didn't. He called him a wicked and lazy servant, didn't he? Verse 30, what did he say happened to him? And he cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. And there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's the end result if we don't use the talent God has given us. He was called an unprofitable servant. He lost out on those promises that his master would have given him, didn't he? His master wanted to give him things all because he was lazy and afraid and he used that excuse. And that's, again, a warning for us today. We all have to look and see what talents that God has given us. All of us have certain talents that God has given us. We have to ask ourselves, what are we doing with it? Are we burying our talent in the ground, waiting for Christ to return? Are we using it to serve others, to serve God and to serve others? God expects a return on what he gives us. We can't just bury it in the ground. Now, a lot long ago, I was talking to one of my customers. I run a landscape business. And I thought, well, six excuses is enough, right? Don't want seven, six is fine. But she reminded me, one last excuse. Many use this excuse not to keep the Sabbath. Number seven, ox in the ditch. Let's go to Luke chapter 14. We're going to read verse 5. Luke 14, verse 5. She was telling me her father had worked on road construction and that they had to work on Sundays a lot. And of course, they considered Sunday the day of worship. And her dad would tell her, oh, that's okay. God understands. It's an ox in the ditch. I thought, yeah, that is a good one. Luke 14, verse 5. And he answered and said to them, which of you have a donkey or an ox that's falling into a pit will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? Now, Christ did not say you could use this excuse to do whatever you wanted on the Sabbath, did he? In fact, in the context, if you look up the last couple of verses up, he was talking about the healing of a man. Verse 2. Behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy, and Jesus answering, spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? You know, I know at times our oxes may fall in the ditch. But in reality, that should be a very rare, rare, rare thing. Most of the situations we can avoid, and you can't avoid every situation, but the vast majority of our situations we can avoid by planning ahead, by considering what's ahead of us, and by building a fence around that ditch, that pit, that is preparing it. A lot of people use this excuse, the ox in the ditch. They take their donkey, their ox, they drag it to the ditch, throw it in there, and then say, look, I gotta go get that ox out of the ditch. They use it as an excuse not to obey God. But we shouldn't do that. We should be planning ahead. I know there's times that things come up, but it should be a very rare, rare thing. It should be. And I'm in business for myself, and there are times that things come up, and I'll say, okay, let's plan ahead for this because they want to do this, and I'll just plan ahead so that we don't get involved with that situation. And you could do that. And if they can't, then I just tell them, I'm sorry, it's the Sabbath. I'm not going to do it then. You'll have to wait till after I get. I can do it on Sunday. It doesn't bother me at all. But I could use it like a lot of people. Well, I knew a bricklayer one time who attended church, and he had lots of oxes in the ditch. There's always something coming up. Well, that's an ox in the ditch. We got to get it done. You can use it, but there again, put your fence around that ditch. Keep those ox from falling in. Again, I realize there are legitimate excuses in this life that we have. But we have to be very, very careful, don't we? Because we can give excuses that will cost us, and it may cost our eternal life if we're not careful. It's very true. You know, we could go, again, I only have seven excuses. We probably could go for hours, and I've got lots of time, so maybe I should. No sermonette. My grandson's already said, great, it's going to be over early. I said, I get to talk an hour and a half. But let's look at a couple reasons. Look at a couple reasons, a couple ways why we should be very careful on giving excuses. Just two ways. Number one, God sees all. Let's go to Job. We'll just read a couple scriptures on this. Job chapter 34. God sees everything. Job chapter 34. Verse 21, Job 34:21. Job 34, verse 21. For his eyes are on the ways of man, and he sees all his steps. God sees everything we do, all of mankind. Psalms chapter 33. Psalms 33, we'll read verses 13 and 14. Psalms 33, verses 13 and 14. Verse 13. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of his dwelling, he looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. Again, God sees everything. We give an excuse, whether it's to our wife or husband, another person, or even to God. Guess what? He already knows it, doesn't he? He already knows it. So don't waste your time giving excuse to God. He already knows. He's seen it. Number two, we're going to 2 Samuel chapter 12. Be honest. 2 Samuel chapter 12. So David, 2 Samuel chapter 12, we'll read one verse, verse 13. 2 Samuel 12. Be honest. Be honest with God. Be honest with others. Be honest with yourself. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 13. David was confronted here by Nathan after his sin with Bathsheba. What did David do after Nathan said, "You are the man"? 2 Samuel 12, verse 13. So David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said to David, "The Lord has put away your sin. You shall not die." What did David say when he was confronted? I know it took some time to get there, but what did he say? He said, "I have sinned." He didn't say, "Well, you know, she was up there bathing and so on and so on and so on." He didn't give all these excuses. He said, basically, no excuses. I sinned. That's what he said. No excuses. Again, it took him a while to get there. But when he was confronted with the truth, he took full responsibility for his actions, didn't he? And that's what all of us need to remember to do. Again, when we stumble, which all of us do, when we fall, when we fall flat on our face, we need to come before God and ask for his mercy, his forgiveness. Not give an excuse, "Well, God, you know, if that guy hadn't cut me off, I wouldn't have thought those things and wouldn't have said that." No, you shouldn't have said it in the first place, should you? It's not, again, God knows, he sees it. We have to be honest. We can't give God excuses. He knows, and he doesn't accept excuses, does he? To conclude, I'd like to reread that quote I'd read from Roy Bennett earlier. However, I want to change the first word instead of maturity. I want to change it with the word conversion. Conversion is when you stop complaining and making excuses in your life. You realize that things that happen in your life is a result of previous choices you've made. Start making new choices to change your life. That's what conversion is. Again, no excuses.